think traditionally it's a topic that nobody really wanted to talk about. It's, you would bring it up to your doctor, you're getting gaslit, you're fine, this is normal, this is natural. Your older female mentors are like, yeah, this is just the way it is, suck it up. But we don't have to suck it up anymore. And I think these days there's a lot more conversation, there's a lot more women's empowerment. We're trying to get the word out that, hey, there's stuff you can do. Talk to your doctor.
What's up, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Movement is Medicine show. And you are in for a special treat today because we have one of the most beloved doctors in the greater Edmonds area joining us today. Welcome, Dr. Marcy.
Wow, thank you very much.
Now, Annie, yes. Tell us about Dr. Marcy, because well, you love her.
I love her. I love her. Well, we've been really working together with patient care for,
20
gosh,
years.
Yeah, 20 years. And I always hear different things from patients about their doctors, right? But she's one of the most beloved. And I just hear wonderful things. She cares deeply about all her patients, but really is a huge advocate for women's health and is currently getting a certification, additional certification in menopause, which she's already an expert in. So she's layering more on top of it to really help us to unravel the great mystery of menopause, which I'm in myself.
Me too.
What is it again? Yeah. So maybe I thought we could start with really simply defining like that perimenopause. I know that can start when you're really quite young and people aren't expecting it. And then that when you get into menopause, like what really is happening to us? Mm-hmm. Maybe start there.
Yeah. So menopause is basically defined as not having a period for 12 months consistently. And so there's a whole period of time called perimenopause that can last anywhere from a few months up to 10 years prior to the onset of true menopause. And during that time, what's happening in our body is our ovaries are deciding that they're kind of done doing their job. They've been working real hard for a long time, and they said, you know what? We're finished here. So when our ovaries stop working, they stop producing estrogen and some other female hormones. And when estrogen levels drop in our body, it really creates a lot of changes in our body physiologically, emotionally, and in terms of nutrition and so forth. So it's really quite a difficult time for a lot of women because there are, interestingly enough, there are estrogen receptors all over our bodies and in our brain, in the thermoregulation center of our brain, in our hypothalamus and hippocampus, which affect emotion and memory, in our joints, in our ovaries, in our skin, in our hair. You name it. So it can, when our estrogen levels drop, it can really create a lot of changes that can be unpleasant for women. Most people have heard of the sort of standard symptoms of perimenopause, which are the hot flashes and the night sweats. Night sweats are basically just hot flashes that happen at night, but they're really disruptive to our sleep. So mm-hmm. we're not getting deep, restful sleep. We are waking up to have to change our sheets, and that can be disruptive. Some of the skin changes involve vaginal atrophy or dryness and painfulness in the vaginal area, memory changes, brain fog. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I feel like for me, learning more about this topic in my area of manual therapy, musculoskeletal therapy, I have so many women sort of even mid-30s, 40s, approaching 50 that are experiencing a host of really kind of unexplained musculoskeletal complaints and vertigo, frozen shoulder, unexplained joint pain. Things are just exploding all over the place. And the thing that comes into my head is like, how do I help them? Like, is this something I can really fix? Or is this something I should be sending them to you for? Like, where do we start getting the information we need so we can properly diagnose where it's coming from and manage it? Like, do you have any advice there as to if we see these things that are suspicious?
Yeah. Well, perimenopause can start, I mean, actually, I have some gals who start like in their mid-30s. That's very early. But the sort of average age of perimenopause onset is about 45 to 50. And if you start having these types of changes, that might be a big component to what's happening, is that your estrogen levels are dropping. Now, you're probably not in menopause yet because you're probably still cycling. And you may be having cyclic changes in your estrogen. But when your estrogen is low, you're going to have more joint pain. You're going to have, a lot more musculoskeletal complaints.
Well, it's an anti-inflammatory hormone as well, right?
Estrogen is an anti-inflammatory hormone. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, so how do we combat this? So we know sort of the Mediterranean diet, the anti-inflammatory diet approach, which I don't actually know if women know they should be really thinking about that when that perimenopause year comes or time comes around.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to segue into this yet, but I'd like to explore more like, how do women discover where they're at? Do they get blood work testing done? Is it symptom-based?
Yeah, it tends to be more symptom-based. Although if they're having onset of symptoms that are suspicious for menopause and they're earlier than 45, which would be typically unusual, I think it does make sense to do some lab work. And there are, we can check estrogen levels. We can check follicle stimulating hormone level, which we kind of call the menopause hormone level, progesterone levels. But the trouble is that when you're in perimenopause, it's so cyclic and it can change from day to day that you may have normal levels of estrogen and follicle stimulating hormone if you're checked at a certain time of the month. And then 2 days later, you check them and they're low. So it's not super helpful, just the blood levels themselves.
Is there a better testing method?
It's typically clinical.
Yeah.
Just to basically diagnose it based on clinical symptoms.
Really interesting, because I know that I had mine tested and I had really super high estrogen. And then like literally probably 2 weeks later, I had none.
Yeah.
I had nothing. Zeros
example.
Across the board.
Yep.
Right?
Isn't that
all
wild?
All over the place.
Yeah.
Well, I would imagine then, Dr. Marcy, we're in a situation where for some women, as they're trying to uncover or figure out what's happening with them, with their body, that they might run into a lot of challenges with getting a proper diagnosis.
Yeah. And I think traditionally, it's a topic that nobody really wanted to talk about. It's, you would bring it up to your doctor, you're getting gaslit, you're fine, this is normal, this is natural. Your older female mentors are like, yeah, this is just the way it is, suck it up. But we don't have to suck it up anymore. And I think these days, there's a lot more conversation, there's a lot more women's empowerment. We're trying to get the word out that, hey, there's stuff you can do. Talk to your doctor. If your doctor is gaslighting you, go to somebody who's a menopause specialist. So the North American Menopause Society, or NAMS, they do the certification process. And there are, like, you can go to their website and look up who is a certified menopause specialist in your area. And it might be helpful to talk to somebody like that if you're kind of feeling like your doctor's shutting you down. Unfortunately, doctors who are Western trained don't have a lot of experience with menopause. And up until just about 20 years ago, it's a long story, but back in the day, they used to give hormone replacement to everybody. And then this big clinical trial came out called the Women's Health Initiative in 2002, and it basically showed that there were additional risks that they didn't understand before with hormone replacement. And so the pendulum swung the other way, and they said, oh no, nobody can have these hormone replacements. It's bad. It's terrible. But now with a lot of the newer studies, we're finding that there are very safe ways to deliver hormone replacement for women to alleviate their symptoms. And we know a lot more about lifestyle and diet and exercise. We know a lot more about some of the different supplements that can be utilized to help with some of the symptoms of menopause too.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I want to touch back on hormone replacement therapy because I think people are still scared of it.
Yeah.
But I know that there's a difference between the type of therapy that was done for that study and then what we consider bioidentical hormones are.
Yes.
And I'd love for you to define that a little bit because people are still, I think, a little bit scared of thinking about hormone replacement therapy.
Yeah.
So can you help us with that question a little bit?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. So in the Women's Health Initiative, they took 16,000 women, all with a uterus. There was actually two segments of it. One of them was women without a uterus who've had a hysterectomy, and the other, but we're going to focus on the folks who have a uterus. And they divided them into two groups. They gave half of them PremPro, which is Premarin, estrogen, and progesterone, oral supplement. And they gave the other half a placebo. Nobody knew what they had. And then they just watched them over about 5.5 years. And they realized that, guess what? The women who had the PremPro, their menopause symptoms were significantly better. And they also had some other benefits in that they had significantly less osteoporosis and bone loss. But we always knew that estrogen and progesterone combination would slightly increase your risk of breast cancer. And that was true. But what they thought they were going to see is that women who had hormone replacement would actually have decreased heart disease. But it turns out that wasn't the case. And so there were 7 more out of 10,000 women that did have heart disease. So we thought it was a benefit. It was actually a slight liability. So they stopped the study. They said, oh my God, this is terrible. We can't do this anymore. But since then, we've looked at the delivery mechanism for estrogen. And if you take it as a pill, it goes through your gut and it gets processed by your liver. And your liver does different things to it that cause your cholesterol to go up a little bit, that cause a slight increase in heart disease. However, if you have it as a transdermal patch, that doesn't happen. In fact, some of the later studies show a decrease in heart disease in women who are on hormone replacement with transdermal estrogen. So the transdermal estrogen actually is showing that there's a lot of positive effects. First off, the menopause hormone, the menopause symptoms are significantly improved, and then decreased heart disease, significantly decreased osteoporosis, hip fractures, decreased colon cancer, interestingly enough. And there was a study that just recently came out of Finland that actually showed if they used transdermal estrogen, that there was a slight decrease in breast cancer in
women.
That's
amazing. Yeah.
So we've always known that breast cancer is a concern and that blood clotting disorder is a concern for women who are on hormone replacement. But if you look at the things that kill women, about 25% of it is heart disease and only 10 to 12% of it is breast cancer. So if you have a strong family history of heart disease, you're actually better off to be on an estrogen replacement. And definitely if you have a strong family history of osteoporosis, if you yourself has had breast cancer or you have a first or even sometimes a second degree relative that's had breast cancer, that's definitely something that you want to talk to your doctor about. And there are cases where it makes sense to put those gals on hormone replacement.
Interesting.
But not for everybody.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that because I think we're all confused about it.
I know.
Yeah. And it, which is really difficult. I have a question.
Yeah.
Do they have, I don't think they have a transdermal progesterone or do
no.
they?
No. And actually,
and why is that?
Thank you for bringing that up. You're so brilliant. So progesterone is not well absorbed through the skin. And so if you apply it, so here, let me back up just a skosh. If you have a uterus and you're given estrogen, you must have progesterone. So if you have unopposed estrogen in the setting of having a uterus, estrogen increases stimulation of the uterine lining or the endometrial lining. So it increases your risk of endometrial hyperplasia, which is a precursor to endometrial cancer. And so you can't just have estrogen. You've got to have progesterone in combo with your estrogen. So if you have a uterus and you're on estrogen, if you have transdermal progesterone, it is not effective. In fact, it increases your risk of endometrial cancer. So your progesterone needs to be oral.
Oral.
Yeah.
Mine is oral, but as you said that, I was just wondering. So that's a really interesting point.
Glad you brought it up.
Very cool. Oh, yeah. I like that. Now, another question. So I feel like menopausal women are very targeted by supplement companies.
Oh my gosh.
Perhaps
so
way too much. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some good ones out there. Is it a really whole nother podcast topic, or can we talk about a few things that probably are okay to take?
Yeah, let's touch on it a little bit, but it is a huge topic. And,
yeah.
And we could do a whole separate like series of podcasts on that. So in general, here's one thing that I want to sort of myth debunking that you brought up, this bioidentical hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody likes to hear that, they're natural. Well, the FDA version of bioidentical hormones are the same thing that your doctor would prescribe. And
yes.
That's FDA approved, and it undergoes rigorous testing and to make sure that it's safe, that it's effective, and that it is what they say it is. However, there's a lot of supplements out there that are supplements by definition are not regulated by the FDA. And so you really don't know what you're getting. And there's no strong clinical studies to show that this is safe for you, that it's efficacious, that it's effective, and that you're actually getting what they say is in it. There's really no regulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to be very careful, and it's buyer beware type of situation. There are a few brands out there. Certainly really important to get your calcium and your vitamin D because that's important for bone health. And it also just helps with general energy and wellness. There are some specific perimenopause, menopause supplements. There's one called Estroven, which has black cohosh, which is an herbal supplement that has been shown to help with hot flashes. In actual clinical trials, that has been shown to help. It also has some soy-derived phytoestrogens and isoflavonoids. So those are antioxidants that help our body feel better and help kind of replace some of those estrogen that's produced by our body in the form of a phytoestrogen or plant-derived estrogen product. So Estrovin's probably the most highly recommended amongst consumers. There's another one I looked up. It was called, I can't remember exactly, but it was not as highly recommended.
So you're saying that if it comes in like a gummy, like a, and it's like this
from
yummy
Costco
looking
that
thing
tastes
from
good.
Costco, and it's like the menopause gummy, it's probably not going to
You
deliver.
Could probably eat it, Barry, and it would be fine for you too. So
Yeah. Well, I mean, guys can eat phytoestrogens. It's not going to feminize them. So you're fine to do that.
I would. No, it's more poking fun at the trend that has really manifested or kind of gained a lot of momentum over the last 5 years of gummy vitamins.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really more a shot at the gummy vitamins because...
There you go.
Like, come on. I have teen guy and teen girl gummy vitamins in my
wife
house.
Has a Flow gummy vitamin. That's why I bring it up. And their marketing is phenomenal. It comes in this cute little, it's this round
it's
little
yummy.
Gummy. It's this cute thing and it's all packaged really well. I just am always very skeptical about a gummy delivery mechanism for vitamin.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that certain minerals and vitamins cannot be delivered in a gummy. Like a good example of that is prenatal vitamins. If they're a gummy, they don't have iron in them because iron tastes terrible.
Tastes terrible.
And so you have to get the swallow pill. So yeah, the whole gummy industry, love it, but it's not 100% awesome.
Let's switch gears to like a little bit about diet, weight training, protein. Yeah. Like, how do things change for women? We know we lose muscle mass starting at 30 or something like that, right? We start losing it pretty rapidly when we're 50. Mm-hmm. And we have a bone density risk, which you addressed a bit with the vitamin D, taking vitamin D with K2 in it. Do you have any advice for training for women?
Weight training is actually really important. If you don't use it, you lose it over time. And menopause is kind of this turning point in our lives where there's a significant change in our bone density. So we basically, we derive most of our bone density in our 20s and 30s and somewhat in our 40s with respect to putting calcium and density into our bones. And then at the menopause, our estrogen levels drop. Estrogen is a really important part of bone metabolism. And so we start losing bone, but sometimes it's like going down at a really rapid slope. And so we need to intervene with that. Bone is a dynamic tissue. It's constantly changing and remodeling itself. And so if you use it, your body will make it stronger. But if you sit on the couch, if you're a couch potato and you never use your bones, your body says, well, heck, I got other things to do with this calcium. I'm going to put it someplace else. So if you use it, your body will make it stronger. Just like if you're using your biceps, if you do a bunch of biceps curls, your biceps gets bigger. Do a bunch of bone curls, your bones get bigger.
I absolutely love that analogy. I don't think people think of bones as dynamic tissue. I don't think people think about that. And we're all thinking about building muscle. And we know that we should resistance train for bone, but we don't really understand what you just said. Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
We've got to load our skeletal structure for it to build and strength. So that, for anyone listening, is called weight training. At least 3 times a week.
Yeah. And core strengthening is so important. And I know that you would agree, Dr. Annie, because core is so critical to our spine and to our posture and to our function and to our bones too.
Yeah.
And so after menopause, as we start to lose muscle mass, if we're not careful about maintaining that core strength or revving it up, if we haven't been doing that, you will end up with a lot more back strains. You'll end up with a lot more.
Yeah. Things will kind of fall apart. Your extremities will kind of fall off.
Yeah.
If you
they
don't
just
keep
fall
your core
off.
Strong. Everything is just
the wheels fall off the car.
The wheels
man.
Just fall off the bus. I know. There's no messing around when you get over mid-40s.
Yeah.
You have to really
take it seriously.
You have to take it seriously. Otherwise, things will catch up to you. It's sad but true. Let's talk a little bit about, like, I feel like so many women, I mean, I know that we gain some visceral fat naturally as we go into menopause. That's just how it is, right? So many women are so like in such huge calorie deficits trying to lose weight. I know it's too much to get into weight loss here, but women are starving themselves, doing a lot of maybe high intensity sort of cardiovascular exercise. I don't think giving themselves enough nutrition, good nutrition, the right nutrition. And it's a vicious cycle for their bones, their muscle mass, their lean muscle mass, their energy, their sleep, the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are women just too hard on themselves?
Well, I'm constantly surprised by how much I assume people know about nutrition and oftentimes how much they don't know about nutrition.
Yeah.
And that processed foods in general are pretty bad. I mean, there's really bad processed foods, but even just like soup in a can or like stuff that you kind of take for granted. Oh, I just put that in with my other casserole or whatever. It's full of processed junk. And if the more we can eat healthy and get back to like whole foods and natural sources to those foods, complex grains, omega-3 fatty acids like avocados and fish, and you don't necessarily have to take it in a supplement. Like the best way to get these nutrients is truly in your diet. Calcium is a good example. A lot of people, they're taking all these extra calcium pills, but it's like the best way to get it, the best way to absorb it is through your diet. And so trying to get these types of nutrients through our diet is like the most important.
Yeah.
And avoiding smoking and avoiding a lot of other processed things like Diet Cokes. And I like my Diet Coke too, but just not too much on that. And I'm often surprised how folks will come in with those like 64 ounce like big gulps, and they're just sucking those down a couple a day. And it's like, do you know how much sugar is in that? And so you really do have to stop and think, maybe meet with a nutritionist or a dietitian. Hey, what's in the food that I'm eating? And like step back and really take a look at it. And then think of ways that you can incorporate more nutrition and just whole foods and lots of vegetables and fiber and, you know, lean meats.
Yeah, I love the thought of adding to your plate rather than obviously taking some things out like your 60 ounce big gulp.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But when you think about adding nutrition to your plate rather than, I think people go in like a starvation mode, right? They can't eat anything and they're just going to rather just like, okay, add like a ton of salad to your plate. And
right.
Or on the flip side, they eat a ton of stuff and they don't really think about it because there's, I think for some people as they age, there might be a point where they stop having a vision of themselves as being vibrant and empowered and healthy at whatever stage they are.
Yeah.
So it's, I think there's a core self-belief you need to embrace that wherever you are, however old you are, whatever point in your journey is, you can always, it's never too late, like turn it around. It's like you can have this beautiful, healthy, vibrant vitality if you're willing to just even start taking small steps towards it. And I think part of your message of empowerment for women who are going through menopause is that, one, you're not crazy. And there are a lot of things you can do to feel better and to step into your own sense of self and power at whatever stage you're in. And that's a great message.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the most important message is you're not crazy. Because everybody kind of makes you think that, like, oh, well, why am I not remembering things? I think I might have dementia. Or why are my joints hurting me? Or why can't I sleep at night? Or why don't I want to have sex with my husband? So much of that is wrapped up in these changes. But yeah, empowering women that there's something you can do about that, I think is like so, so important. And I wish that more women would seek it out and feel comfortable doing that, because there's no shame in this. This is a natural part of our life cycle. Just like puberty. I mean, remember puberty? If anybody's got a teenage daughter, they know, like, you can be kind of crazy then. Well, you can be a little crazy too during the menopause change. So, but it's normal and there's help out there.
Yeah.
So as a person's kind of going through that, or they're listening through this and they're hearing this and they're thinking, maybe that's me, or like, oh my God, finally somebody's like this. Yes, I'm going through that. What would you recommend then? What are next steps if you kind of self-identify?
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely I would reach out to your primary care provider, whether it's a family medicine doctor like myself or an OB-GYN or internal medicine or whatever it is, your naturopath, and just share with them the symptoms that you're having. And don't try to like hide it. Oh, I'm ashamed because it signifies that it's this milestone that I'm getting older. Oh, I mean, this happens to women in their 30s sometimes and 40s. So embrace it and figure it out and find a way to make it work for you and to optimize your life through this process, because there's help out there.
Yeah. And I think really just not being quite so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. As we start to feel this change, getting the help we need, obviously. And then to your point, Barry, like, people will say to me all the time, well, I'm just old, so therefore I don't expect to be able to do this anymore. I quit skiing. I quit running. I don't do this. I don't, all these things. But I would say, don't accept it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Don't put up with
that. What the hell?
Baloney.
And I think like so many of the things that we talk about here, it's really important to work with someone who's going to help create a really personalized approach. I think the future of medicine and the medicine that we really are big believers in are personalized, individualized medicines tailored to the person, to specifically you and your unique challenges. And that, because there's all kinds of stuff that can be done that might be effective for you and might not be effective for you. And that's why I think it's important to work with a provider who takes that personalized approach and who can also help connect you with a care team of other providers who might be able to help in different ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you bring that up, Barry, because it's true that there's not one solution for every woman. And in my practice, I tell all women that, I think I might be menopausal. Okay, this is a big topic. We need to sit down and we need to look at your specific risk factors. We need to look at your habits. Are you a smoker? Do you have a family history of breast cancer? What kind of symptoms are you having? And so we talked a little bit about hormone replacement therapy. That's not right for everybody. And some people would prefer to avoid it. And maybe they're okay because they're not having bad symptoms. So I also always bring up my a la carte menu. So we have HRT, hormone replacement, that sort of solves all the problems. I mean, most of the problems. And then we have the a la carte menu. So if you're having hot flashes, we have something to help with that. If you're having vaginal dryness, we have something to help with that. But it's very individual. Each time I have this conversation, it's very specific to that individual woman. And so I think it's really important to know that it's not just HRT or nothing. There's tons of other options.
Mm-hmm. That's really important. And I think also, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I expect we all, women of color, Caucasian women, Hispanic women, probably all process things a little differently.
Absolutely.
As well, right?
Yeah. And they may come to the table with different, just sort of different ideas about what they see for themselves. Mm-hmm. And we want to take that into account as well and work. So I just encourage women to reach out to the doctor and allow their doctor to create a plan for them that's tailored to their needs.
What about if they want to reach out to you? Are you seeing patients currently seeing
I've been
patients?
Doing this for 20 years and I have such a full panel that I'm
I was worried
not
about
technically
that.
Yeah, accepting new patients, but I have a number of providers in my
that you
clinic.
Can refer to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you heard it there. You might not be able to see Dr. Marcy herself, but she has a trusted team that can help take care of you.
There's several doctors at our birth and family clinic that do. In fact, some of my partners are referring their patients to me to talk about menopause. So they may not be my patients, but I am doing consults for them.
Perfect.
That's great to know.
That is great to know.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Marcy, thank you for being here. Yes, I mean, this is obviously a huge topic that we just were able to kind of give a great overview and kind of take some verticals down a couple different pathways. And it would be fantastic to have you back on the podcast some other time to go deeper maybe on some of these, because I think this is such a huge topic. And I love that you're out there championing it and bringing it to light and helping really empower women with knowledge and options, because that's the thing. It's like, you got to know that it's okay and that there are a ton of options for you to get help.
Yay. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. Thanks, everyone.